This is Brandon McEwen interviewing Pat Lewis. It is Wednesday, November 30th, 2016, and we are at Pat Lewis's home in Parkview Towers.
Correct.
All right. So, let's get this started. You and your sister are both singers.
Yes.
And I want to start off with asking where you got your voices from.
My mother. My father, they were both musically inclined. Yeah, my mother sang. Not professionally, of course. She was in choirs and around the house, you know. And I don't know whether she, her family, her first cousins, they all sang because she didn't have any sisters or brothers. But yeah, it's in the genes.
You just grew up in a musical household.
Yeah.
Growing up, you first were born in Pennsylvania and then you moved to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And what sort of influences from your childhood led you to become a musician?
Well, my mother said I was singing all my life. She said you used to just at the dinner table, or whenever you were eating, you chew and hum, you know. So after I got where, you know, there were songs that I really loved. They had records, 16-inch. The McGuire sisters and all of them, you know, they used to sing Cross Over the Bridge. And I love that music, and I used to sing along. Diane and I used to harmonize with that. So, I mean, you know, they were before my time, but, yeah, but they used to play all of that stuff, you know, all of those records. And, of course, we came up with Ruth Brown and the Shirelles, no doubt, all of these groups, and we just like to harmonize.
Mm-hmm. And then you were in choir and you did...
Of course.
A lot of performances as growing up as well,
didn't you? Talent shows. I know my older sister and I went to Durfee, and I went to Central during the time they started sending ninth graders to Durfee. I mean, to Central. And when I left Durfee and went to Central, then she and two of her friends, they were getting ready for this talent show, and they're like, wow, Pat is over here. Well, she could be our lead singer, you know. So, you know, I got into talent shows, and we had known Rose from school, and once I got to Central, we were in glee club, choir, all of that stuff. And once we got to Central and got a little fast, and my brother had already taken me over to Thelma Gordy's, and where I was auditioned by Richard Street and Norman Whitfield. And that was the beginning of, like, I'm going to be in this business. You know, so once we got the group together, and we had the three of us always remained together, but there was this one girl that we used to let her do the lead all the time because she was god awful in the background. So we were like, okay, Brenda, you sang lead so that we could harmonize, you know. And then we also had a group, I can't even think of what our name was, but there was a male group also. And we all used to rehearse around the same time, and then we all sang together. And during that time, he was walking up and down the streets singing under the streetlight, and just whenever you together, you're singing, skipping school and singing on the bleachers, you know. So, yeah. So that was my I had this love for music where I would eat, breathe, and, you know, music. I just didn't want to put it on there, but you know what I mean.
And you were part of multiple groups, right?
Yeah, yeah. I I used to fill in for this group called the Sonettes. They were at Thelma Gordy's. That's where, you know, I had my audition at. But they had a record called I've Gotten Over You. Very nice young ladies, you know. But then I was older. I was younger than I appeared. You know, everybody right today, when they find out how old I am, they're like, I thought you was older than that. Not that you look it, but you've been around forever. Yeah, I'm the baby. But yeah, we, that group and then the Adorables, which Jackie and Diane and I, Jackie Winston, we all went to school together. And her sister Betty, she was older than we were, maybe about three, you know, but you 3 or 4 years older, even when you're still a teenager, when you're small, when you're a child, and even when you're still a teenager, that 3 years just seems to mean a lot, you know, and I'd be like, you're not really that old. But anyway, we all got together because Diane and Jackie and I would sing on the way home. And she said, my sister sings. And they were kind of, I think they were dealing with Bob Hamilton, Popcorn Wiley, Herman Weems, Freddie Gorman. And they're the ones that decided that this would be a nice group here. And they were like working for Mr. Wingate. Out of Joanne Jackson's basement. And they also had the Reflections and the Tremangos. I think that's what the name was before they were the Shades of Blue. And we used to record over to Wilbur Golden's. Did a lot of background work over there. But then, this was his first great big session, so we went to Chicago and recorded at RCA a song that Bob Hamilton, I don't know who the other writers were, but I know for a fact it was him. And that was just like Romeo and Juliet. And they took us to do the background. And the other group went too because they were recording something. I just don't remember what. And we did just like Romeo and Juliet because I remember the other group doing the hand claps with us. That's the beginning of everything. They soon put up built the studio, Golden World, which was on Davison and between Dexter and Wildermere, and then we started recording. Well, they had to get that thing in order because, you know, I mean, flush the toilet, it'll be on the track, and like, what in the world, you know? So it had a lot of glitches, you know, and so which they had to get that together. And once they got it together, we had a beautiful school. There'll never be another school like that, you know. A lot of artists came through there too. They recorded the Adorables, Deep Freeze. Martha and Vandellas had Heat Wave. We had Deep Freeze. They also recorded during that time Barbara Mercer. George McGregor was there. He was a fantastic drummer and producer, writer and producer. At Barbara Mercer, there were quite a few female artists over there. Juanita, I think her name was Juanita Moore. Teresa Lindsay. I think Rose Batiste was over there, but they never recorded her. And Did I say Edwin Starr? Anyway, I remember when they brought Edwin Starr in, Bill Doggett brought Edwin Starr and Sonny Stitt in. And I know the Andantes used to be over a lot doing background. I was working there during the, after I would get out of school, I would be the receptionist and I would do all the little paperwork, the mechanical license and, you know, make sure everybody's copyrights were together in the beginning until they got a secretary. Yeah, that one day that Duvain couldn't make it, that was a great opportunity for me. You know, Mr. Wingate said, oh, Pat is here.
And you're talking about when you were joining the Andantes, correct?
For the Edwin Starr, yeah, that Edwin Starr. I didn't actually, I guess you could say I joined them because after they found out I was a perfect blend, then they started calling me, you know, and eventually called me to Motown. You know, so I used to work every Monday, then I would work Mondays and Wednesdays. Yeah, and I was doing that, and they recorded a few more songs on the Adorables because I think we had Ooh Boy and B. We had about three or four singles before the group disbanded because Mr. Wingate says this, you know, it was just like there was no interest there. Jackie, she had something that she was doing, and Betty, she was busy doing something else, and he was like, and I don't know what Diane wants to do, he says, so I'm going to go with Pat. You know, so he got George Clinton and Sidney Barnes to write a song for me, which he wanted to do. He wanted to do something for Martha Jean, the Queen, who used to say, I'm into something and Can't Shake It Loose, I betcha. So they split the titles up. I got Can't Shake It Loose. Teresa Lindsay got I Betcha. And so that was the beginning of my career. By the time I had another release, the company was sold. But I did record other songs there. But they also went along, they came along with, I guess Don took them, Don Davis, I don't know. I guess once they gave me, let me make my own decision about going to Motown or, you know, do you want to go with Solid Hit Bound? And Solid Hit Bound was the best choice for me. Because Motown, my God, look at all the acts they had. You know, female acts. You know, they still, Tammy was there. Kim Weston. I think Mary was gone. I think Mary Wells was gone. But they had a lot of female acts. Can't just, Chris Clark, she was probably still there. Can't recall them all, but they had a lot. So I went on with Solid Hit Bound. But some of those songs followed me because I don't recall recording Look at What I Almost Missed anywhere else but Golden World. And Andre Williams did a song on me called No Baby No. And I think that's on the other side. I think that's the B-side of Almost Missed. So, between the Motown thing and Can't Shake It Loose being actually a turntable hit, but it got me to working, you know, so I traveled with that song. And I did a lot of work at home. 20 grand, the Kelly's, Mr. Kelly's, which was a fabulous club over on Shane. He had a lot of acts, a lot of big acts in there. And Chit Chat Lounge, of course, where Martha Jean, she was the DJ on, I can't think of what night it was, but she would have us to come in as a special guest. And Frank Ernie Durham, he had the 20 grand. The Gold Room, where you would come down those spiral stairs, you know. And he said, "Woo! Look like she, did they spray that outfit on you?" He said, "You wearing that outfit?" Well, Mr. Wingate had me, they had me super sharp. Joanne made sure I had all of the etiquette that, you know, well, the adorable, she made sure we had all of that we needed. We didn't, I didn't get with Maxine until later on. But, you know, by the time I got with her, I had all I needed to know, you know, because Joanne was a very etiquette queen. She was beautiful. She was a very pretty lady. She is, because she's still here, you know. Put you in the mind of, I guess, Lena Horne. She was, Joanne was beautiful, inside and out. And anyway, I went to working. And between that and doing this background work, I survived very well. You know, even with the $5 that they started paying us that we used to make for a song. And then I raised to $7.50. Well, and then when we got to $15, wow. You know, I mean, because you might do two or three songs a day. You may work 5 days a week. You know, so when you pick your check up at Motown on Wednesdays, you had a pretty decent check for that time. And that's not including our outside work, you know. And because they didn't want the Andantes, nor did they want the musicians playing for anybody else. But you know, these guys had families, you know. They had to do the work at Motown, they did their outside work, and then they were doing their nightclub work. And when you have families and you have bills you have to pay, and hell, you want to be able to, like, let's go out to dinner, you know, let's have a drink or something, you know. But and they had to have strong mates to even deal with a musician or entertainer, you know. And most of them did. Most of them had very strong mates. Yeah, but even the Andantes, like Sonny Sanders, who arranged my first two songs, and he did a lot around here in Detroit. And he was also my musical director when the Riviera Theater on Grand River and Joy Road, they used to have shows like the Apollo. And I remember I was there with Eddie Floyd, Ruby Andrews, Pigmeat Markham. Let me see who else was on that show. God, it was a couple of groups on that show. But it was ran just like the Apollo. And which, I guess Detroit just didn't have that audience like New York. And so that didn't last too long. But I did, from there, I did quite a few shows with Pigmeat Markham. Do you know who he is?
I'm not personal. I've heard the name, but...
He was a comedian. Yeah. Oh, what a comedian. Yeah, he and Moms Mabley. You familiar with her?
No.
That one I'm not. Oh, you need to check them out. Yeah, they were two of the great black comedians, you know. And I had did quite a few shows with him, and that was historic. That was historic. Anyway, we eventually, getting back to Sonny Sanders, he eventually left Detroit and went to Bronzewood Records, who was owned by Carl Davis, and that's where Jackie Wilson was signed. And he called, he said, oh, well, I've got to have my Detroit musicians and I've got to have my singers, you know. So that's how we came by. First time we went, we did two songs, and that was The Whispers Getting Louder and Sweetest Feeling, which they also released Sweetest Feeling on Irma Franklin because they used the same background. And then we went back to finish the album, and that's when we did Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher. And that record, man, they still playing that to death today. Yeah, because I had to call Sonny Sanders, who just passed maybe a little over a month ago. I had to call him so we could get paid. You know, because they have this thing called the arroyalties.org, and they pay all of our overseas royalties, that they make sure we get paid. And the United States hadn't come on board yet to pay us our back royalties, but they pay them. And by our name, they didn't put our name on the record. So, do you know, they said, we see Sonny Sanders. I'm like, well, that's all you need. So they called him, and he filled out a paper and everything and faxed it to him so that we could get paid for our song, that album that we did on Jackie Wilson, because all the songs, most of the songs took off, but Higher and Higher was huge. Mm-hmm. So we can get paid for our movie rights and all of that. Yeah. So, Jackie Wilson, yeah. So after all of that, one night I was working at Casino Royale with the Drifters. And matter of fact, we did a weekend, Thursday through Sunday. And that's when Aretha, one of her singers, hadn't shown up for 2 weeks, you know, to rehearsal and everything. And she was like, I gotta have a singer. And she knew that, let me rewind. Don Davis, after Solid Hit Found folded, LeBaron Taylor moved to New York and became the vice president of Columbia Records. Don Davis bought United Sound, and he was also, he was affiliated with Stax Records, and any of the artists that needed background, he would bring the tracks here, and we would put the background on. And I was arranging backgrounds. I wasn't getting any credit, but I was doing it. And so that's how Isaac's stuff got up in the batch. But at any rate, I was singing at the Casino Royale, and I had did Johnny Taylor's Who's Making Love, and Aretha and Johnny and them, they were just like that. And she was like, who is that? Who's singing Who's Making Love? And he said, that's Pat Lewis, and you know, that's her group. And she wanted me. She said, you got 2 weeks. She said, I just need you for 2 weeks to come out, because she said, I don't have a first soprano. Like, okay, so I went out. I learned the show on the bus overnight. You know, I just learned the show, and the choreography and everything. So I think we played Cleveland. And she said, just sing off stage, you know, just as long as I have that note. So I did, and the next night we played Pittsburgh, and she said, you can work the middle, you know. So I'm like, yeah, I work the center, so whatever I do, it won't be wrong. She said, just don't stop moving, and God knows, don't stop singing. But I just stayed out there with her so long, you know. And between her and my commitments that I had to her ex-husband, Ted White, and Ben Cosby, who used to own Ben's High Chaparral, I had, you know, I was busy. So Isaac at the time, his record from all that stuff from Stax, his album had, his songs came up in the mix, you know, because Stax needed another album to, I guess, to complete their, whatever they was getting ready to release at the time. And that album, Hot Buttered Soul album, took off. Yeah, it took off. Then he wanted to know if, you think they'll go on the road with me? You know, when Don asked me about it, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what we wanted. You know, we wanted to, our group, you know, because we were known as the group, because we sang all of George Clinton stuff from I Want to Testify all the way up, Maggot Brain, all of that stuff. And we did not have a name because we were individual artists. Diane, after The Adorables, she went with Herman Griffith to Scepter One. George Clinton cut a song on Rose. And let me see, that was Whatever Makes My Baby Feel Good. He recorded that on her, and Diane had on Scepter One, I Thank You Kindly. And so we knew we'd always get together and do background work, but to actually be a group, you know, and that record took off like it did, and I said, well, name, a name, a name. Well, Hot Buttered Soul. Why not?
Just made sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, made a lot of sense. Have I covered a lot there?
Oh, you definitely covered a lot there. I want to go back a little bit.
Sure.
So what was the atmosphere really like at Golden World?
Golden World?
Yeah, I heard that it was just crazy.
It was. I loved it. I just loved it because it was something going on in every room. Something being, you know, it's just creative juices just flowing all through that building. You know, even upstairs that hadn't totally been completed, but there was a room up there, you know. I thought the atmosphere was great. And like I said, there'll never be another. I learned so much at Golden World. I could have been an engineer. That's not what I wanted to do. I was impatient. You know, I mean, it was boring to me. I would push buttons, you know, they maybe late at night and someone is recording and they're like, Pat, I'm going to go out here and do this part, and all you got to do is push this button, or, you know. So, I mean, I knew all of that. But I did not like for them to call me. If I had to sing, I did not like for them to call me in while they were laying the track. Because sometimes things were done from the floor where all of us had to be out there. We had to sing at that time. But then later on it got where they could just cut the track and then we could sing later. So I didn't like being around when they were doing that because my adrenaline would go. Especially if you want me to sing that night. But fortunate, we were fortunate enough to have the Funk Brothers playing on so many things. It didn't take them long. Didn't take them long because they were good readers, and for them to read and to play with the feel that they had, it was wonderful. And I mean, you can get everything out of them as long as you got them some Kentucky Fried Chicken and a drink. Shoot, they play all night. Yeah, that's but other than that, I think Golden World had a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere. And then, you know, I was just in the midst of it all. A lot of people weren't in the midst of it all like I was, you know. Because I never called Mr. Wingate Mr. Wingate. I called him Uncle Ed, you know. Because that's how he acted towards me. You know, it was just like my uncle. Well, when he was just like dragging his feet in the beginning, and we're in school, but we're at the studio late at night. Then my father, he was kind of giving my mother a little hell, you know. Well, what are they going to do? You know, they're up all night. It's hard to get Pat up in the morning because I just hated to get up. But my sister, she would get right up, but I was hard to get up in the morning. I just didn't want to. So my mother had to go up there and have a few words with him. And after that, no more problems. Yeah, to me, Golden World was a wonderful, wonderful avenue for a lot of us. The Debonairs, you know, Thelma Hopkins, she had a little group up in there. And Joyce Vincent was one of the Debonairs, so, you know, they ended up being Dawn, that sang with Tony Orlando. Mm-hmm. So I trained a lot of girls up there. Yeah.
And at this time, you were like...
I was young.
Yeah. What was that like?
I was old. Nobody knew how old I was.
What was it like? Did it add any pressure or anything? Was it a different dynamic for you than possibly other people?
Oh, it just seemed to come so natural for me. You know, that's why I say... that the Lord blessed me with many gifts. Many.
Mm-hmm. And then, well, Golden World's not really that, it's not as well known, sadly, as
Motown.
And because Motown's just kind of consumed every other aspect of Detroit music.
Yeah, they did. They just was like, I tell you one thing, Golden World was some great competition, wonderful competition, and yeah, they wanted to just suck them all up. So by them, that was the only company really that was worth getting, because a lot of the other companies that were, you know, the record labels that were around and record companies that had to go to maybe United Sound and record. A lot of folks went to United Sound and recorded. And some of those labels came up along with Motown. Motown just happened to be, I don't know, it was something that Barry had that drive for, and he just happened to be the one. But having said that, I just think Detroit should not just say Motown when there were so many other contributors here, you know. And if you weren't signed with Motown, then that, does that mean you were nothing and, you know, never existed? That's bull crap. You know, stop Motown and let's deal with the history of the music history of Detroit. You know, that's what I would love. You know, Motown, yeah, some of those people happen to make it because of the machine that they had behind them. It was not because they were any better than you, a better singer than you, because hell, some of them couldn't, you know. Some of them didn't even do their own backgrounds, you know. So it's a lot. That's the thing that really upsets me, that they deny the Detroit music history. And I'm going to always fight for them to do something about it. Yeah.
Yeah, Motown has become sort of the genre of 60s Detroit music and that sound, even though it's just, specifically, it's just that company.
Yeah, but you know, if you go overseas, if you go to, if you deal with the Northern Soul, they love Detroit music, and it's not too much Motown in there. Not at all. You don't find too much Motown in there. Aretha Franklin is not in there. You know, when they came over here to buy records, they want the other artists, you know, and they know so well, they know these people so well. They're very knowledgeable about their music, about our music, you know, so, and it's, you know, it's rare music, and they're collectors, and we have music, we have records that are so expensive. That, you know, if they can find one in mint condition, if it's that record of mine, No One to Love, they find that in mint condition, that's £2,000, that's for almost $4,000, you know. So I'm just hoping that Detroit wakes up, and like this Motown Museum, they should have, to me, next door could have been something, that Rhythm and Blues Hall of Fame that they're trying to, Lamont Robinson is trying so hard to make the home Detroit. And it's more than Detroit artists in there, it's artists from all over, you know, and Detroit would have been a perfect home for that, since Detroit is a music capital. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Detroit definitely is.
Oh, yeah.
So, next thing I want to kind of go over is that Northern Soul. I don't know if you'd call it a movement, but
it's been a great movement. That picture right there of that building is, let me tell you the name of this building. The Twisted Wheel. That was the original home of Northern Soul. And it's the legendary Twisted Wheel. And Northern Soul has been around, long time. Even their kids come up in it. And now their kids, you know, it's getting younger. But a movement would be something that has moved and stopped, right? This is an historical thing that's just here to stay. This is the type of music that these people love, and that's pretty much what they all listen to.
And how did you get involved with that?
Edwin Starr. Edwin in 82. Edwin called myself, J.J. Barnes, Al Kent, and another singer, Lou Raglan. Lou Raglan was out of Cleveland because Edwin's home was Cleveland. And he called us over there for the Rick Tick Review, which was, it was quite an experience, because we had no idea that these people knew us as well, and how they love us. They literally love us. You know, you can go over there, like I was over there in September, you can go over there, and if you don't have your head on right, you can come back wrong. Because these people here in the States, they, you know, I mean, we have Northern Soul pockets. But the majority of these people don't know. So if you have any type, excuse me, of ego, you better leave it over there. Instead of coming back here, like so many people do with this great big head, you know, because they don't know what you had just experienced. And I think anytime any artist gets the opportunity to go, they should. It is, what an experience.
And through this Northern Soul, that's where you met Ian Levine, correct?
Yeah, Ian Levine. Well, actually, I met him, but didn't, you know, I met him as a DJ. I met him in the 80s for real when he came here and wanted to record everybody that had been affiliated with Motown. And he wanted me to coordinate this because he knew that I was an arranger. He you know, like they know your history. They tell you what time you went to the bathroom. They know, oh, she was recording, but she left out. She took a break, a bathroom break, and then she went, this is how they are so up on your stuff. They know more about you than you. And he asked me to, would I coordinate, and which I did, to pull everybody together. And but I'm like, I can't arrange everybody's songs. I can't do that because it's just, the first stay was a short stay, but it was just wonderful. It was a big reunion, and I think that a lot of artists thought that, here's my second chance. That's what I think that they thought, especially once he came back. Because the first one was at United Sound. The second time was at Sylvia Moy's Masterpiece. And we really worked a long time. That time he was here for a long time. And because I ended up everything. Then I had to go to California to do the L.A. family, and everything I didn't finish up, I had to go to England to finish up. But yeah, Ian was like, oh my God, he was so excited. And even though some groups were still together, but had other members, and as maybe the ex-lead singer or something would show up, then he wanted to record them. And what Ian did was, he ended up spreading himself kind of too thin, you know, and that's where a lot of the money problems came in, you know, and everybody just, I hate Ian, he didn't pay me, and he did this, that, and the other. But what they didn't know is that a lot of those records didn't do anything. You know, the compilation albums, there's a song I did on Frances Nero called Footsteps. It did well for her, you know, but it was not like having a huge record here in the States. It did well for her in the Northern Soul scene, you know, so she was thinking that she should have all of this money, and it just wasn't working like that, you know. So, and as far as a lot of them, he gave money up front, never saw him again, you know. So, I mean, he in his case, he was well, I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't, you know. But I continue to work for him, and he and I are very good friends till this day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to backtrack a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to go over your relationship with George Clinton. Because you've done a lot of work with him.
Oh, yeah. Still working with him.
So, if you kind of just want to go over, like, how you met, what kind of stuff you've done, the just dynamic that you two have, whatever you want to talk about.
We met at Golden World. Then we did a lot of, when we were doing the Parliament. I remember first meeting the Parliament. They were coming down Davis, you know, with them loud lime green, horns, blue, all those loud colored suits, because they're East Coast. Hair up here, pompadours, fried to the gill. And see, all of them were barbers. Matter of fact, I went to Plainfield, to the shop and everything, because they were all from Plainfield, New Jersey. I mean, that's where they lived. A lot of them were born, you know, in the South somewhere, but the home was Plainfield. And we got to recording the Parliament, which we did a lot of recording on Dexter and Waverly, upstairs over the Dexter and Davidson supermarket. It was Tatori's. I can't think of those brothers' names. Anyway, they had that studio. Then they had another studio that was on Livernois off Finkel, and it was upstairs. I think that was Terry Sherma, because Thelma Hopkins used to answer the phone. Terry Sherma, Sound of Things to Come. I said, hey, Thelma. You know, she, oh my God, I don't know who she was trying to be sexy for. But we did, oh my God, we did so much recording there. And, you know, the Parliament, like I said, I think we did two or three albums I did with George. And he would leave me. Like he would leave me now, leave me in the studio. He trusts me to get his background work done, you know. And he knows that I can harmonize with myself very well. I've been doing it for years, long before these other folks decided that, oh, I can do it. And, I mean, we just, once I went with Isaac, though, I came back home because, you know, we would have like 10-year intervals. Well, we wouldn't see each other for 10 years, and then we'd come back together and start working like we never left. But I came home and I went to the 20 grand because we used to work the 20 grand. We used to perform with them. We had rings on our toes and headbands and chain belts and just crazy. And I thought that was out far enough, but the time when I came home and I'm like, well, where's George? He had cut these, I said, are you crazy? He had cut stars and moons in his head. And I'm like, what is wrong with him? Well, those were his LSD days. George Clinton is the only person that I know that, well, I've never known him to shoot heroin. But the drugs that he would mess with, he's the only one I know that came right up out of him. You know, he survived all of these things. You know, and I tell him, I said, you know, you're amazing. But anyway, I've traveled with him. I've toured with him. The last one I did was Germany. You can go on YouTube and see that. It was Parlor Funkadelic Mint and the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Because he had, you know, I recorded with them, you know, and Prince and Tracy Ullman. And he, Paul Simon. Yeah, George had me doing, through him, I've done a lot of work with a lot of people. I was able to sing with other people through him. What was I going to say? A senior moment.
Oh, it's totally fine.
But yeah, we did a video this year. Oh my God, what's the name? What is the name of that group? Anyway, we did that video and it was great. We did it at Masonic Temple, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
Yeah. They have this, the name is so easy, it escapes me. You know how simple things can escape you. Anyway, we did it at Masonic Temple, and it was great. They sent me the video too. Okay, well, and then we've done we did some work here recently. Paul Hill, his album was just released, and George went over and did a video with him. But one thing about George, he tries to help. You know, if you call him and say, I need you to do this, I need you to do that, okay, well, I'll be in to do it. And then, you know, with high tech now, you could just send him what you want him to sing, and he'll do it and send it right back. Just be the push of a button. Yeah, but like, we'll probably be doing something, maybe even over the Christmas holidays, because if I go out there, I'm thinking maybe in January, I'll probably go there and stay a couple of days and record, you know, get with him and record. Because I know he'll be home around the holidays because he's in Japan now. They're touring over there. So, we never left each other. We're still doing it. Anything else?
So, you mentioned before that you did a lot of arranging.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't necessarily always get credit for it.
Right. You thought of it. Yep, the name of that group was Slight Return.
Okay, good to know.
Check them out. They're on YouTube.
All right. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so you were...
Oh, I arranged, oh my God, I've been doing, actually, the Andantes were arranging, and I learned a lot from them, and we never thought about it. Don Davis, I did all of that stuff I was doing for Stax and anybody else, you know, I was arranging that. And I guess he said, as long as you don't say anything, you know, if you don't mention it, I'm, you know. So, and I didn't. I really didn't. I guess he said, well, you see a sucker, lick it. Because I sure didn't get paid for it. And after Hot Butter sold, and I didn't get credit for that. And the people who were like his road manager and some people that were with him that well, I just don't want to say. But they came and they said, Pat, you know you're not getting any credit. You should be getting credit for your arrangements. And I'm like, yeah. They said, well, this will be the last album that you don't get credit for, you know. But I'm trying to think, did I get credit? I think Aretha gave me credit on her This Girl's in Love's album. Yeah, but most of them didn't, you know. And at that time when I did start getting credit, that's all it was credit. Because they had not yet started the Grammys giving you Grammys for background vocal arrangements. That wasn't going on. You know, but then when they started it, you know, I wasn't even with anybody that I was arranging for at the time, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they need to backtrack and give me my Grammys.
We will get on that.
Yeah.
And so last year, you were inducted into the R&B Hall of Fame. We mentioned the Hall of Fame briefly.
Yeah. See my gold record?
That was for that?
Yeah. Yeah, officially. I'm like, okay. Somebody really, really paid attention and think I am deserving of something, you know? So... yeah, I'm very happy about that. It gives you a little platform to stand on, you know. Because George, he was supposed to take me into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which he did not. And he said, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll make sure you get in there. I'm like, yeah, right. I'm not there yet. So, I don't know. Maybe one day. But it was a lot of people that he left out, and I'm like, certainly you should not have left me out. I was very upset about it. Yeah, so it's not my first disappointment in life, and I'm sure it won't be my last. But, you know, I really don't care, because what's to be is going to be. And I have recognition. People, I have history. People know what I've done. You know, so if I don't have, I got a lot of stuff that I don't have on these walls. I said I was going to go and dig it out and hang it up, you know, so maybe I'll do that. Yeah, a lot of awards from here and there that, you know, appreciation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of write-ups. But I'm not going to worry about it, because, like I said, what's to be is to be. And I'm going to get a lot of my stuff before I leave here. You know, a lot of people don't sell a million till they die. I'm going to get a lot of my stuff before I leave here. Lord willing.
So, do you have any parting thoughts on the music biz and your illustrious career, what you're doing now?
What I'm doing right now is putting together the Northern Soul Detroit Agogo that will be here October 18th through the 23rd of October, yeah, next year. And the British are coming. So they will all be here. And what I'm doing, I'm lining up the acts that are still here, you know, like Phil Dick. It's his show, and you know, like he and I were talking, like, well, let's pray that the people we've lined up will still be here, because nobody is getting any younger. And, you know, it seemed like when people start, when they leave, like Robert Bateman, Sonny Sanders, who else was there? You know, like they go in threes and fours, it's just like a bunch of them leave at one time. And so we're just hoping and praying that so that's what I'm doing. And I'm also recording. I still do a lot of studio work, and but right now my focus is on my son to get his music finished and out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but between that and trying to hook groups back together that, say, like the Peps, there's only one that's still living, and that's Joe Harris from, he's also Undisputed Truth. And so, got two guys, the Holloway brothers, that are going to be singing with him. Don from the Capitals, that had the record Cool Jerk, he's the only one. You know, and just trying to put, you know, as long as you have an original, you can kind of put a group back together again, unless you do like Ralph Pruitt, the Fantastic Four. All of them are deceased, but before Ralph died, he put a group together because he said he wanted the Fantastic Four's music to live on. And so in the new Fantastic Four, they sound really good. You know, I mean, not a Sweet James, but they have a definite good sounding group. And the object is to keep our music alive. Mm-hmm. So I'm busy. Yep. Yeah, busy. So, doing what it is I love. And see, next year I will be 70 years old. And everybody's like, "What? Okay, what are we going to do for your birthday? What are we going to do for your birthday?" And I said, "I want to have an elegant evening with Pat Lewis." He said, "What?" I said, "Oh, I'm going to entertain." "Why you want to sing on your birthday?" I said, "That's what I do. I want to put, I haven't put on a fabulous show in a long time where I would just be doing my mixture of music, my Northern Soul, and some of the things that I used to do with Isaac, that I used to, when I would sing, when I was doing shows here, you know, he had a couple, some songs that I really like Stranger in Paradise, the dynamics of his arrangement and opening with that song. You know, I want to entertain. So that's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I'll let you know.
All right. Sounds good. Well, I want to thank you for letting me interview you.
Oh, well, thank you, Brandon. Thank you so much. Did I run my mouth enough?
Oh, you get plenty of information.
Okay.